Well, this is the problem. The problem with this logic, and we heard the Russians, this was their Vietnam. America had, of course, its Vietnam. Whether this will turn to be into another Iraq or not is a question that is being contemplated here in London every day as the British investigate the way they went into war in 2003 against Iraq. It seems to me that there isn't much of that investigation and inquiry going on now as the war is escalated in Afghanistan, meaning it's clear that the American public opinion is not behind it. The Western European public opinion is not behind it. And in many ways, this war has lost credibility. As we've heard by many of our guests over the last half hour, many consider this to be a civil war in Afghanistan. And many think that it is possible to reach a political solution between branches of the Taliban and branches of the government and try to have that political solution possible in order to stop any attacks within or outside Afghanistan rather than use more of the same war as a solution to all of America's security problems.
Defining moment for President Obama, for better or for worse?
Well, certainly is now everyone understand that this is President Obama's war in Afghanistan. I think what's important is how much he's trying to put emphasis that he's not like his predecessor, that the war in Afghanistan is not like the war in Iraq, and that he thinks the quicker and the deeper he goes into Afghanistan, the quicker and the faster he's going to get out of Afghanistan. But will he be able to fulfill that promise? It's not clear to us yet. I, personally, am a bit skeptical.
We never have known, Marwan. Marwan Bashara, our senior political analyst, live in London for us. Marwan, thank you for that.
Cedric Muhammad, Black Coffee Program. Hey, listen. Those of you who are readers of blackelectorate.com for some time, you know that there's numerous interviews on the site for years. But one in particular that I got real good reaction on and that I enjoyed immensely, that a lot of people probably forgot about, because sometimes I actually forgot I did this. I'm going to put a picture of a man up on the screen right there. Take a look. Distinguished Caucasian gentleman. Bevan Alexander. A world-renowned military scientist. War historian. Author of the book, The 13. Well, actually, How Wars Are Won is the full title of the book. But it's The 13 Rules of War. So we talked in 2003, right after the invasion of Iraq, about the U.S. military strategy there. You can still see that interview at blackelectorate.com in the archive section. Just type in Bevan Alexander, his name. You spell it B-E-V-I-N-A-L-E-X-A-N-D-E-R. I shot him an email last night before the speech of President Obama. I want to read to you what Mr. Alexander responded with. You can go tell somebody, yeah, we build with military scientists. I said, dear Bevan, I hope this finds you well. Sir, 6 years since our in-depth interview at blackelectorate.com on the night of President Obama's address outlining his plans for an increase in troops in Afghanistan, I thought it would be great to learn from you if you believe there are distinctive parallels, as some believe, between the situation in Afghanistan today and what took place in Vietnam militarily. And this is the email I sent him last night. I go on to write, you answered this question for me in 2003 as it related to comparing Vietnam and Iraq. And I wanted to see if you accept the analogy made between Afghanistan and Vietnam in any way, in terms of tactics, war strategy, or political objectives. Lastly, in what ways is it appropriate to compare the United States' presence in Afghanistan with that of the Soviet Union 30 years ago? Now, here is Bevan Alexander's response to my question. Oh, hell. I'm going to nominate myself as the gangster of the week. I'm going to hold you in suspense. The response that Bevan Alexander gave to me when we come back. December 2nd, 2009. Yes, I missed all of you all. In case you missed it, I was singing right out the gate. And I do owe Rod Ginyard, Culver City, California, a book. Sort of. He didn't name the name of the song, but he got the artist right. Donald Byrd. Now let's see if Rod can find out the album. This is the most slept on album that Donald Byrd ever made, by the way. It's a glorious day. Prince Akbar is in the building. Prince Akbar from Chicago, Illinois. He says, Cedric, I am so confused. I watched Obama's speech last night and I thought I was seeing Bush. Yet I am still shocked the right wing is still complaining about Obama's speech. It's like they will lynch Obama either way. Prince Akbar writes, does he know how doomed he is, or is there something I'm missing? He says, also, did you notice the West Point soldiers sleeping? Are they drinking fluoride too? Yeah, they were chewing gum. It's getting real lax over there in West Point. Man. Real casual, I thought. So let me get back to this dialogue that I was having through email with military scientist, war historian Belvin Alexander, the author of the book, How Wars Are Won, 13 Rules of War. I asked him last night before the speech if he accepted the analogy made between Afghanistan and Vietnam in any way, any shape or form, war tactics, strategy, or political objectives. Here's what Bevin says. Let me give you a picture of the book, those that don't know, if you haven't seen it. I highly recommend you get this book. Well, let me put Bevin's picture up again. I'll throw the book up a little bit later. It's in the blackelectorate.com bookstore. But don't order it. Just order my book. It's the only book we're selling. It says, Dear Cedric, very good to hear from you again. I hope you are well. The parallel between Afghanistan and Vietnam is quite close. And the prospects in Afghanistan are just as bleak as they were in Vietnam. We have the identical situation we had in Vietnam. An indifferent to hostile population from which insurgents can strike and where they can hide, an ideology that is as attractive to young Muslim fundamentalists as independence was to the Vietnamese. A border with Pakistan over which supplies can flow and insurgents can retreat. The Afghan central government is ineffective and is riddled with corruption. This is Bevin Alexander, war historian, writing to me this morning. The Afghan central government is ineffective and is riddled with corruption. Its base of support is extremely small. On the other hand, the Taliban are being supported by an enormous opium poppy network that provides most of the money in the country. This is the central power base. The United States must attack the trade because it is a criminal enterprise. But numbers of Afghans will support the drug trade because it brings in money. President Obama's date for pulling out of Afghanistan gives the Taliban and Al-Qaeda a positive period they must hold out, after which they can expand once again. The program aims at disrupting and dismantling Al-Qaeda. See the testimony of Defense Secretary Robert M. Gates in the Wednesday, December 2nd New York Times. I do not see how an American army can achieve such a goal. Al-Qaeda needs only to pull back into Pakistan if hard pressed. I see no hope for President Obama's program. I am most discouraged. Sincerely yours, Bevin Alexander. Now, let me to give you the weight of that. And of course, there may be a point here or two there that you disagree with, but I may want to pursue him on a little bit further. But do the knowledge on Bevin Alexander. You can go to the site BevinAlexander.com. Let me read you his background. Bevan Alexander is the author of 10 books on military history, including How Wars Are Won, How Hitler Could Have Won World War II, How America Got It Right, and his latest book, How the South Could Have Won the Civil War. He was an advisor to the RAND Corporation for a recent study on future warfare and a participant in a recent war game simulation run by the Training and Doctrine Command of the U.S. Army. His battle studies on the Korean War, written during his decorated service as a combat historian, are stored in the National Archives in Washington, D.C. He was formerly on the President's staff as Director of Information at the University of Virginia, Charlottesville, VA, and is currently an adjunct professor at Longwood University in Farmville, Virginia. He was commander of the 5th Historical Detachment in the Korean War and received 3 battle stars for service in the combat zone 1951-1952. He has also received the Commendation Medal for his work as a combat historian. He is a specialist on military strategies. His book, Lost Victories, was chosen by the Civil War Book Review as one of the 17 books that have most transformed Civil War scholarship. He's a military scientist. He knows one of the sciences that we were never to be taught, some of us. Now, I'm going to read again what he said. I emailed him last night. I'll read you my email. And then the man on your screen, I'm going to read his response. Dear Bevan, I hope this finds you well. 6 years since our in-depth interview at blackelectorate.com. On the night of President Obama's address outlining his plans for an increase in troops in Afghanistan, I thought it would be great to learn from you if you believe there are distinctive parallels, as some believe, between the situation in Afghanistan today and what took place in Vietnam militarily. You answered this question for me in 2003 as it related to comparing Vietnam and Iraq, and I wanted to see if you accept the analogy made between Afghanistan and Vietnam in any way, tactics, war strategy, or political objectives. Lastly, in what ways is it appropriate to compare the United States' presence in Afghanistan with that of the Soviet Union 30 years ago? Bevan Alexander, military scientist, war historian, renowned scholar, says, Dear Cedric, very good to hear from you again. I hope you are well. The parallel between Afghanistan and Vietnam is quite close, and the prospects in Afghanistan are just as bleak as they were in Vietnam. We have the identical situation we had in Vietnam. An indifferent to hostile population from which insurgents can strike and where they can hide, an ideology that is as attractive to young Muslim fundamentalists as independence was to the Vietnamese, a border with Pakistan over which supplies can flow and insurgents can retreat. The Afghan central government is ineffective and is riddled with corruption. Its base of support is extremely small. On the other hand, the Taliban are being supported by an enormous opium poppy network that provides most of the money in the country. This is the central power base. The U.S. must attack the trade because it is a criminal enterprise, but numbers of Afghans will support the drug trade because it brings in money. President Obama's date for pulling out of Afghanistan gives the Taliban and Al-Qaeda a positive period they must hold out, after which they can expand once again. The program aims at disrupting and dismantling Al-Qaeda. See the testimony of Defense Secretary Robert M. Gates in the Wednesday, December 2nd New York Times. That's today. I do not see how an American army can achieve such a goal. Al-Qaeda needs only to pull back into Pakistan if hard pressed. I see no hope for President Obama's program. I am most discouraged. Sincerely yours, Bevan Alexander. What do you think? I want thoughtful stuff. Again, we have tentatively scheduled December 16th as the date to discuss this whole thing for at least 2 hours. But I only want to do it if we're going to do it in informed fashion. Otherwise, we just push it back until people actually read the 2 books that we recommended, JFK by L. Fletcher Prouty. And the other book is titled Lessons in Disaster. Now, if you have gotten, matter of fact, who has gotten those books? If you let me know, then I'll know whether we have a growing minority to guide the discussion. Otherwise, if it's just going to be me, I think I'll pass. This may be leading somewhere altogether nasty as it relates to Russia. I think this decision brings us one step closer to a U.S. war with Russia. Here's George Friedman, another military scientist on Russia Today.
Up next, we hear from George Friedman, an American political scientist and founder of a private intelligence corporation. He's been doing some crystal ball gazing, looking at how this century will progress.
RT is in Austin, Texas, sitting down with George Friedman, American political scientist, author, and CEO of global intelligence corporation Stratfor, a leader in the field of global intelligence. Sir, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Now, my first question to you is, your corporation has been described in the press as the shadow CIA. Which one of your reports can you remember when you knew you were head of the CIA and the news?
I never liked being compared to the CIA. I hope we're better. But, for example, we reported 12 hours before the attack in Iraq in 2003 that war was coming on that day.
What countries are your clients mostly interested in?
At this moment, our readers are primarily interested, of course, in the Middle East and what is going to be happening there. But they have a very large interest in China from an economic standpoint and increasingly in Russia, to try to understand what Russia is going to be doing and why they're doing it.
What kind of relationship are you expecting to form between Russia and the United States in the upcoming years? Can this relationship ever really turn into a partnership?
Well, in international relations, I never know what partnership means. You pursue your own national interest. Certainly the model of the 1990s was never going to be one that would be sustained itself. The issue now is whether or not the United States and Russia moves to greater geopolitical confrontation, or whether Russia and its economic problems forces it to go through another round of turning to the West. I think in spite of recent developments in the Russian economy, we're more likely to have confrontation than not.
How would that develop?
Well, it has already developed. The American intention of extending NATO to Ukraine and Georgia, the recent speech by Vice President Biden about the future of Russia economically and calling on Eastern European countries to support pro-Western governments. Russian relations with the Iranians and the Syrians, all of these represent a growing tension between the two countries. And the issue is how much deeper these tensions will go, and I suspect they will go deeper.
Now, one of your books forecasts events that would take place in the 21st century. Where and what kind of wars do you see erupting?
Well, I see a period of conflict between the United States and Russia that's already underway, but not a Cold War, because Russia is not a global power any longer. It is a regional power. I think there are emerging countries that are going to be more important than Russia, Japan and Turkey and even Poland, which I expect to emerge as major powers over the next 30, 40 years. And this is where the conflict will arise that will be very serious in the century.
Which countries do you expect to become really strong economic powers? What about China, Brazil, and India?
Well, if you take the BRIC countries together, their GDP is $8.2 billion. The American GDP is $14.2 billion. So all of them together would have to double their size, and the United States would have to grow not at all for the four together to become equal to the United States. We have to remember that the American economy is 25% of the world economy. It will take a very long time for any other economy to emerge as a major economy in that order. Only Europe, if it's united, and if its unification was serious, would be a rival. The others not.
What countries do you expect to stay behind, on the other hand?
I think China will fall behind. I think China has had a magnificent run for the past 30 years. But we have to remember that of the 1.3 billion Chinese, 600 million have a household income under $1,000 a year. And another 440 million have one below $2,000. China is a very poor third world country that has a small sector that's an industrial sector.
Some major trends forecasters predict that we will be seeing a new terror attack in the United States, or we will see America get involved in a new major war in its short-term history. Do you see this happening?
Well, I mean, those people who think that there's going to be a terror attack obviously have intelligence sources deep in the terrorist movement to be able to predict such a thing. I don't know how you predict that unless you have this intelligence. And frankly, I don't think they have the intelligence. The United States may become involved with Iran, but whether that would be an extended war is very difficult to see. But I see no serious way to predict a terrorist attack. It could happen, it could not happen. I mean, we don't know.
Your reports have suggested that the United States and some other Western countries are preparing a war with Iran.
Well, the United States has stated very publicly that in the event that Iran refuses to give up its plans for a nuclear capability, the United States does not intend to allow that to happen. There is a general agreement among the 5+1 that Iran should not do this, that there will be sanctions, and that if the sanctions don't work, other steps will be taken. So this is hardly some great secret that anybody is keeping. The real question is going to be the Russian government. If the Russian government refuses to participate in sanctions, then no diplomatic solution to the Iranian problem is possible. The United States will be confronted with the choice of a nuclear Iran or airstrikes. Interestingly enough, more than any other issue, Moscow will decide what happens to Iran.
Can the United States really afford another war?
Well, can the United States afford a nuclear Iran? Certainly we could afford another war. If by that do you mean do we have the power?
Financially at this point of the recession.
The recession is over. The economy is growing. It's been a very normal recession. And the most normal part is that everybody said the world would end because the world is collapsing.
Sobering, stimulating, and hot. It's the Cedric Muhammad and Black Coffee Program.
Cedric Muhammad.
I have a short time to deal with this enormous subject. And I beg you, therefore, to weigh my words with the attention and thought which I have given to them. Many people think that the best way to escape war is to dwell upon its horrors and to imprint them vividly upon the minds of the younger generation. They flaunt the grisly photographs before their eyes. They fill their ears with tales of carnage. They dilate upon the ineptitude of generals and admirals. They denounce the crime and insensate folly of human strife. Now, all this teaching ought to be very useful in preventing us from attacking or invading any other country, if anyone outside a madhouse wished to do so. But how would it help us if we were attacked or invaded ourselves? That is the question we have to ask.
Cedric Muhammad. Cedric Muhammad. Cedric Muhammad.
It's the Cedric Muhammad and Black Coffee Program.
I bought a band, Sandus on trombone. He's going hard, back to back notes, get with it. Take off the coat, meditate. Let your brain compel, just think. As the beat excel to your eardrums. Core cells to
Cedric Muhammad.
Freeze. While I break off an ease, real smooth. Combine the piano, my voice nasal, no soprano. Wake up.
Cedric Muhammad.
I know you hear me, and when I'm on the stage, you just cheer me. Up another level, down below, I'm throwing with the devil in a cage. I'm on the rampage. You need a number, wanna know my age? Psych.
Cedric Muhammad.
Other groups, I only will rag them and wait. While you debate, I hesitate. Observe your wax style. You've been rapping, talking for miles about nothing. Cause you don't amaze me. I'm like a game, everyone plays me. Regular, extended to the bonus. For some of you, I think you should have noticed it was funky.
Cedric Muhammad.
That was funky.
Knowledge, wisdom, and understanding. Only on the Cedric Muhammad and Black Coffee Program. Cedric Muhammad.
Get into it.
Understand the sound you're listening. It's a band. We're not your glistening with horns and trumpets. I really bumped this track up because I knew I must get you to dance across the floor.
Cedric Muhammad.
Myself more of this beat than teach all of you how to really reach your peak. And don't have a seat because father bass hits harder. I stand drums never with hi hats. Yourself to ultra magnetic. Pick up my sculpted phonograph copy. It's not sloppy. Ask your girl. She called me Bobby.
Cedric Muhammad. Cedric Muhammad and Black Coffee Program.
We gotta keep some beats coming over like that.
Go ahead, man.
Word, man. Crazy, friend.
Cedric Muhammad. Cedric Muhammad.
It's all about this funky beat, man. You know what I'm saying? I'm gonna go with my girls. I'm gonna drop this tape off. You know what I'm saying? I'm gonna see y'all know what I was doing. No question. She's gonna be like, you know, she's gonna be like, wondering where was I?
Knowledge, wisdom, and understanding. Only on the Cedric Muhammad and Black Coffee Program. Sober, stimulating, and hot. It's the Cedric Muhammad and Black Coffee Program.
I'm gonna hear you go hard on the trumpet. You know what I'm saying, brother? Get that fat belly.
Cedric Muhammad. Sobering, stimulating, and hot. It's the Cedric Muhammad and Black Coffee Program.
We're beyond the point of saying that Barack Obama inherits a lot of messes around the world. He also inherits a lot of activities that President Bush began, and he's going to have to make some very difficult decisions about whether to continue them. One of his intelligence chiefs said to me that President Bush wrote a lot of checks that Barack Obama is going to have to cash. Mm. And I think what he means by that is there are covert actions that have begun that Obama is going to have to look at even before he fully understands them. Another one of Obama's aides said to me, you know, in many ways, we have a Bay of Pigs problem, which is the action that President Kennedy inherited from Dwight Eisenhower. And he didn't fully understand it. Pakistan's a great example of this. President Bush last summer authorized a series of ground actions that included going after non-Al-Qaeda members. And Barack Obama's going to have to decide, do you do that or not?
That was January. Meet the Press. Remember, we ran that back when we brought the show in March.
You are tuned in to The Watchman, Cedric Muhammad, on the Black Coffee Channel.